going to go back to throw the ball. Sets up, looks, throws toward the corner of the end zone, and it's intercepted! Intercepted! The Hawks have the ball! Head of the 35, the 40, Kenny Wayne's going to score!
Thomas already got a crease. There he goes, and there he goes. He's off. 94 yards on the opening play. Touchdown.
Play fake, Harrison goes hard right down the field for the home run. Got Parker. He's in a foot race. They won't catch him. Touchdown, Ducks.
This is the Duck Pod. I'm Ryan Thorburn, joined as always by Austin Meek. We're in the middle of Oregon's bye week, much needed bye week after last week's 70-21 loss to Washington. This week's guest, we've wanted to have him on the pod for a long time, and what a great timing to get him on. We have Bud Withers, a Register Guard alum, recently retired from the Seattle Times, has seen more Pac-12 football, I guess, especially in the great Northwest, than just about anyone. Bud, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
You bet, guys.
So we kind of know what the perspective of last week's game is down here in Eugene. What's it like up in Washington? Is Chris Peterson ahead of schedule? Are people just relieved that the streak is over? Or are they thinking, as they probably should, about, you know, getting back into the national scene and maybe even getting into the playoff?
You know, I think it's probably the last one there, Ryan. I haven't heard a lot of specifics about the streak, and maybe that's just because of the magnitude of the victory itself. But really, what you're hearing a lot on the radio is maybe some, it could be some slightly overheated talk, but a lot of talk on, I mean, is this team headed for the 14 playoff, you know, and what are the big obstacles the rest of the way? And I mean, they're halfway through their season now, and Adam Jude, who you guys know well from Oregonian days, and he's an Oregon alum from the Seattle Times staff, noted the fact that in the preseason Peterson said, "Well, ask me after 6 games what I think of our team, and it's way too early." This was like back in August or whatever. Well, here we are, 6 games in, and they're looking pretty golden right now. They're relatively healthy, and they've obviously had 2 big smashing wins over Stanford and Oregon, and now it's, I mean, certainly within the building at the UW, they're not talking about playoff or anything like that, or you wouldn't think they are, but there's a lot of people outside that are eyeballing that schedule pretty closely and saying, okay, what are the major obstacles to taking this thing all the way?
Well, Bud, I'm not sure there's anybody who's equipped to see both sides of this series as well as you are, having covered the Ducks and then obviously worked in Seattle. At the time you were covering Oregon for the Register Guard, did you ever see Oregon football becoming what it is now? And then does it look to you from your vantage point like maybe it's headed back to looking a little more like it did when you were here?
Well, good question, Austin. I've said before, I never would have guessed that they would have reached the pinnacle that they did. I mean, playing in 2 national championship games. I mean, if you go back to my time in Eugene, you know, in the 70s and 80s, I mean, it was just scratching out a living, basically, metaphorically for Oregon football, you know, trying to get a winning season, trying to scratch your way into a bowl game and so forth. And I mean, the heights that Oregon rose to decades later, you know, I never could have seen anything like that. But so then they go on this incredible run, especially under Chip Kelly, and then now the bottom has apparently fallen out. And pertaining to your question, I think the real interesting question right now is, what is a reasonable level of expectation for Oregon? I mean, I think people are probably unrealistic if they think, okay, this is a program that ought to be back in a national championship game. Not that it can't happen, but they certainly shouldn't expect it to happen. But on the other hand, I don't think people should look at a program that has terrific facilities and a really great stadium, things like that, and still has Phil Knight. I don't think people ought to assume that it's headed for the bottom of the Northern Division of the Pac-12 either. So somewhere in there's a sweet spot, and it should be a pretty doggone good spot for Oregon. Now, I don't want to make it sound like, gee, the good times are all over, and the best Oregon can can find its way into the Independence Bowl or something like that. But it, those were really pretty heady times under Chip Kelly and shortly before he got there and so forth, and obviously overlapping into Mark Helfrich's tenure as well. But I don't know if it's realistic to think that that's going to be a regular part of the landscape down there either.
Well, Bud, you joined Twitter this year. Welcome. Twitter is awesome and horrible at the same time. I read one of your tweets where you said the last time you heard an Oregon football coach apologize was 1974, when Washington beat Oregon 66-0. That was Don Reed. And, one of the great things about Oregon is their coaching stability. They have not fired a coach since Don Reed. What do you remember about that 1976 time period when they actually let a coach go?
Well, it was Don Reed's third year, and let's face it, back then, we're talking four decades ago. It wasn't unheard of, but three years was a pretty quick time to pull the plug on anybody. But having said that, there was no energy in the program at the time. Recruiting was at a low ebb. There was just not a heck of a lot going for it. There was really sort of this raging apathy, I think, about football down there, and crowd sizes were terrible. Autzen Stadium at the time was seated 41,000, and there were at least I would say annually in Reed's 3 years there were crowds of under 20,000, and if the weather didn't happen to be good, I distinctly remember crowds of like 15,000, if you can believe that. And so things were really at a low ebb, and even though 3 years was and even is today kind of quick to pull the plug on somebody, I can't say that it was undeserved by any means.
Bud, one of the cool parts of my job is looking back at the lineage of great columnists who have passed through here, including yourself and Blaine Newnham and Ron Bellamy and George Schroeder. And so tell me, if you were the columnist in Eugene now, looking at this Oregon football season, what would be your take? What would be your questions? Tell me your columnist approach to this Oregon football season.
Well, you're a lot closer to it than I am, Austin. So, that's a tough one. But I would say this, from my view at 37,000 feet or in Seattle right now, the question I would have is what is Oregon's edge? A few years ago, the edge was the spread offense and the hurry up style and everything Chip Kelly brought to it, and then there were the uniforms, which were so catchy and such a part of the whole persona and so forth, and then the facilities where Oregon really got a jump on everybody, and now I look at the Pac-12 and the facilities thing. I mean, I still think Oregon's probably got an edge on most of the other 11 schools in terms of some of the really glitzy type things that are in its football facility, et cetera. But everybody else, partly because of the Pac-12 TV contracts and so forth, everybody else has made this headlong dive into increasing or improving facilities and so forth. And so you look, for instance, at a school like Washington State, which obviously has one of the tougher roads to be competitive in the league, and they've built a really nice football facility. It's very functional, and if there were a recruit, I don't think there's too many cases where Oregon and Washington State, for instance, are battling for recruits. But if there were, I wouldn't guess that a recruit would say, gee, the facilities are so much nicer at Oregon than they are at WSU, I'm going to go there. I mean, they're going to choose, if they're going to choose Oregon, they're going to choose it for different reasons. And so, you know, I think that facilities edge has largely dissipated. I mean, now it strikes me that the uniform thing is, while it was such a, it was just, as I said, sort of part of Oregon's persona and really kind of cool for a lot of recruits. Now, when you're losing, that becomes just sort of a thing to mock the Ducks over. It strikes me. It's sort of like, gee, what silly outfit are they going to debut this week? You know, so. I guess my question would be, you know, what is Oregon's edge going forward, and how are they going to, if that edge has been whittled way down, how are they going to reclaim that?
You mentioned Washington State. I think lost in Washington's dominance of Stanford on national television, and then what they did to Oregon, a historic beating of Oregon, is what Washington State did, which was essentially the same thing, dominated Oregon and Stanford. So there's been obviously a power shift in the North Division right now. Could this shape up to be one of the better Apple Cup matchups of all time with the way these two teams are playing? They're the only two Pac-12 teams without a conference loss right now. Do you see that trending towards a historic Apple Cup?
Yeah, it could be, Ryan. I think, and I'm speaking out of school here a little bit, I don't know that there's ever been an Apple Cup where both the two schools were, you know, fighting, say, for the Rose Bowl I was going to say in 1981, and it was a game I actually came up and covered, Washington State could have gone to the Rose Bowl with a win. Washington won the game, but needed help, actually. So it's a little bit of a technicality, but I think this could be the first year that whoever wins the game, the worst they would come out of it with would be the Rose Bowl. And obviously in Washington's case, you could still have the specter of the national title still being the playoff thing being a factor. So, and even with, I mean, let's say Washington State loses one along the way, they still could be in position, if Washington goes undefeated into the Apple Cup, could be in position to win the Northern Division and go on and win the Pac-12 by beating Washington. So, yeah, it could be a pretty monumental matchup.
Bud, give me something that you remember from your time at the Register Guard. Doesn't have to be football-related, any sport, just a vivid memory you have or a good story from your time here.
Oh, sure. Boy, all you have to do is go back to the 70s with the basketball rivalry between Oregon and Oregon State, with Ralph Miller at OSU and Dick Harter at Oregon. I'm sure you guys have heard some of those stories. Just, I mean, that was, you talk about a rivalry. I mean, what we know nowadays as rivalries, let's say in basketball between Oregon or Oregon State, Washington or Washington State, those are like tea parties compared to what went on back in the 70s. I mean, Harter, as you guys probably know, and a lot of Register Guard readers and listeners now know, was, ran a pretty manic sort of style. Everything was going 100 miles an hour, and they were diving on the floor for loose balls. And everything that he brought with him from Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, you know, just this really in-your-face, crazy, really just, you know, all-in type of approach. And the games between Oregon and Oregon State were, I mean, you could almost write a book about the whole, those 7 or 8 years or whatever when Miller's teams went against Harder's. I mean, there was the infamous time when Harder actually tripped a male cheerleader up at Oregon State. He was running around the floor. The game was like 14 seconds left, and back in the day they had this thing called the Chancellor's Trophy, Chancellor's Cup, and the two schools actually played a non-league game in kind of right at the semester break for the schools, as I recall, or quarter break, whatever, like at the end of January. So there was an odd number of games, and whoever took the best of three series or whatever reclaimed the Chancellor's Cup for that year. And this cheerleader was you know, ran around the perimeter of the floor up at Gill Coliseum with the, you know, kind of brandishing the trophy, not waving it in Oregon's face. He was just sort of holding it high for people to see. And Harder was none too happy about that. It was like he came out of a timeout or something, and here comes this cheerleader, and he sticks his foot out and trips him intentionally. It was unbelievable. And the Chancellor's Trophy had this big dent in it, and I think I could be wrong on this, whether the thing is still around, but people said that the trophy eventually got retired, and it was in Oregon State's trophy case with a dent in it.
Well, speaking of basketball and books, Oregon is becoming a basketball school for the first time in a long time this year, and I've heard you're working on a book on Gonzaga basketball. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, be happy to. It's sort of based on their 18-year streak of going to the NCAA tournament and just kind of digging into the climate at the school when they started the streak back in 99. The place was really pretty destitute, not only athletically, but the school financially and so forth. It was just kind of a mess. There was enrollment was down, and basketball sort of picked the thing up and really helped them to basically the school was able to sort of capitalize on the basketball success, and they've had all this, something that still goes on today, and they were able to go through this period of incredible growth on campus with a ton of new buildings and investment on campus and so forth. And so it's just sort of how basketball sort of changed the school, and also sort of looks at a lot of the backstories, of that 18-year streak, and there's, you know, for Eugene readers, there's people down there, I'm sure, know Mark Few was a Cresswell High School graduate, and there's stuff in there about Few's connection to Oregon and with the Oregon job a few years ago when it came open, when Dana Altman got it, and some stuff I think people will find interesting about how Oregon romanced Few and so forth, and so a lot of backstories and just stuff surrounding the 18-year period.
Well, Bud, it's great to catch up with you. We missed seeing you around Press Row, but glad you're enjoying retirement. Let us know when you're done with the book. Look forward to reading that, and thanks for sharing some memories here.
You bet. It should be out in about a month, and coinciding with the start of basketball season, so hopefully we can catch up with you guys again.
Yeah, great. We'll look forward to that.
Sounds good, guys.
Hey, thanks, Bud. We appreciate it.
Thank you. See you.
Thanks, Bud.